Paul's Paisley Penny Arcade. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Paisley Penny Arcade. I'm Mo Abdelbaki, and today is Wednesday, the 21st of May, 2025. That's right. 2025. Isn't that funny? I don't know what's so funny to 2025, but that's where we are. All of us, right here. So how are you? How's everything going? The world is as weird as it can be, so we might as well be as weird as we can be, too. So there we are, and there you are, and here I am, and we're all right here, as weird as we can be. And I am weird. There's no doubt about that. Yeah. And you know what? I've been judged for it. I'm sure that you have been judged for being you, too. And, you know what? I imagine you've judged somebody. I know I have. I've judged people. You say, well, I don't like that, or that person is, or that person is that, or whatever the deal is. And, you know, judgment is kind of a risky thing, I think. Judge ye not, lest ye be judged. That's in a book somewhere. I know what it is. You don't have to tell me. But that's kind of a risky sort of thing to do, isn't it? Judgment? Because judgment is one of those things that really harms people. I spoke with someone just today who has had a lot of judgment put on their lives. Unjustly so, saith I. And I don't like it. I don't like it at all. Now, there are a lot of people who do a lot of terrible things. And I do think that there are times when you and I have the right to say that is unjust, or that is just a terrible thing to do, or a snotty thing to do. My goodness, that was a snotty. It's a good word, snotty. Sometimes you see little kids and they're awfully snotty. Ugh. But, and I raised kids. It's funny, back in the day, it wasn't that bad. And someone would come along and they'd get, you know, hold the kid's hand, would you? We're going across the street and I've got two kids and I need an extra hand. Would you hold that kid's hand? And that kid's hand would be snotty. And they'd end up holding the snotty hand and they'd be all grossed out. And you'd say, hey, it'll wash off. But it never does. For an eternity, that person is feeling that. I have a friend, literally, who, it has to have been, 42 years ago. He held a snotty, banana-covered hand of my son, and he still remembers it to this day. Yeah, that's right. So those are the things that stick with us. But judgment. Back to judgment. I have to complain about something. I suppose it's a judgment of a sort. There's a movie coming out about a mission that's going to be very hard to complete. One might even say it may be impossible, this mission. But they're just ramrodding this thing down our throats with commercial, commercial, commercial. The music is, this dun, 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 over and over and over and over again. And it's on TV shows and They're interviewing members of the cast, and it's like driving me absolutely crazy. I don't know what to do. It's making me nuts. And it's just like, oh my God. They probably spend, what? Oh, I don't know, $120 billion making a movie. And then they turn right around and spend another $60, $70 billion just ramming it down our throats so we'll go see the film. And it's like, I don't ever want to see it. By this point, you're just like, I don't care. And he does his own stunts. And it's like, who really cares? You know, I just, so what? So what? I don't care. I don't care. Yes, I suppose that's a judgment. But I, at the other, on the other hand, I don't care. Don't care. I just don't want to hear about it anymore. For goodness sake. Get it over with. Oh, start the movie. You know, it's to the point now where they have these movies and they begin the movie hype. And I think the movie's been out for weeks. And then I find out that the movie hasn't even started yet. And that the movie's going to start, like, in a week. Or, you know, I'm thinking, gee, has the movie started yet? And you find out the movie hasn't even started, and that the movie's going to start, like, in, you know, like, tomorrow. And it's like, wait a minute. You're telling me that this thing still hasn't happened yet? And it's like, oh, you know. Why don't they stop? Just stop. Just please stop. Because it's ridiculous. Oh, my God. Anyway, that's what it's about. Our culture now is one of... Have they gotten the idea yet? Yeah, they've gotten the idea. Well, good. Give it to them some more. Some more. Just give them a lot more. Oh, my God. It's just unbelievable. I get fed up with that stuff. There's absolutely no subtlety in our society anymore. There's no nuance, you know? Not a hint of gentleness. It's all just as loud as it can be. As loud and as thrustful. Oh, I like that. I say, isn't it rather thrustful today? Yes, it is. It's incredibly thrustful. That's a thrustful campaign. Oh, that commercial is unbelievably thrustful. I like that. I think I'm going to start using that more often. And people go, huh? Then they'll judge me. That guy's an idiot. He says thrustful all the time. Well, I mean it. It's thrustful. People are unhappy. And I think they're unhappy because of the judgments and the thrustfulness of our society. And I just, it's like, why, we don't have to be this way. I don't think we have to be this way. I know I don't have to be this way. And I don't think we have to be this way. We being the colloquial, well, colloquial, it's the wrong word in that place for sure. Forget it. I'm getting old and weary. Not weary. Not yet. Well, maybe. Who knows? I'll find out one of these here days, you know. Now, I live in the West. I live in Colorado. And out here in the West, we say things like, well, we don't say weary. We say I'm getting a little touched and tired. I've been tired lately. And then I was retired. We do that when we get bald. We get bald and we get retreaded. That's right. And retired. That's right. That's a different thing. But I think I know how that goes. Take me out there and retire me and put some tread back on my head. I got my harmonica here somewhere. Oh, no. No, 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 no. Okay. I heard that moan from all of you, even in the future, listening to the rerun, thinking, what's wrong with him today? Nothing. This is my normal way of being. Get back to the idea of judgment. I've been like this my whole life, and it just hasn't been always looked upon as great. And the person I was speaking to today has had to face all sorts of judgments, and I... It doesn't lead to happiness. it doesn't lead to happiness. Now, we can judge certain things. For example, the president of, South Africa was in the Oval Office today with our president. And our president ambushed the poor guy. Jeez, this is becoming a modus operandi, as they say, an M.O. Don't put my name in there. If you're going to, you have to call it something different. You have to spell it different. Modus operandi. That's M.O. Well, pronounce it M.H. Yeah, that's right, M.H. Don't pronounce it M.O. I don't want to be associated with it. But, and he just ambushed him about, white genocide in South Africa, and I guess he made up, I haven't seen it yet, I read the story, and it's just, man, oh man. And I thought to myself, what a terrible thing to do to somebody. You bring him up in front of the world stage, and that's what it is, it's a stage, and it was a staged ambush. And then you let the guy have it. And the guy, I think, was pretty civil. I might have done something totally unusual, like begun scatting. You know, something totally ridiculous. And say, look, man, if you're going to just put it on me like that, I'm going to start riffing. You know, just don't put people on the spot on things like that. That's just not right. That's a form of judgment, too. You say, I'm going to, you know, just pull the rug out from underneath people. Not a good thing to do. I don't know. What's going on? What's going on with the world? Stupidity, in my opinion. I have entitled my opinion for at least a few days longer, I hope. There's a song sung by a feller down there in South Africa, and I guess it's a pretty rebellious song about uprising and, you know, being rebellious and doing violent things. And he said, why haven't you arrested that guy who sings that song? And he said, because we have freedom of speech down there. And I thought, good for you, touche. We have it here too, or so we say. I'm riled up. I get riled up. And we have a lot of judgment in our society right now. And you know what? We probably always have it. We always have it. And I think it's ridiculous, and I think it's obscene. The level of judgment in our society right now is obscene because there's no reason for it. Live your own life. Do your own thing. What do you care about other people doing other stuff? You know, as long as it doesn't affect you. Banning of books. The banning of books? People have actually been burning books. Now, that scares me. Because attacking the intellectuals is always one of the first things that's done. And one way to attack intellectuals is to make books out of fashion. And to, you know, poo-poo them. Oh, poo-poo. You know, poo-poo. I don't know about you, but once you start condemning people in a governmental way, you've got a real problem, especially artists and intellectuals. And, for example, the whole commie thing, you know, the whole commie, the Kefauver, the Red Scare of the 50s. That thing had a lot of repercussions, and it hurt an awful lot of people. And it made a lot of waves. And even though, yeah, there was a lot of fear. I spoke to a lot of people who went through that. I've spoken to a few gay people who went through that. I knew a gay man who absolutely went through that. He had been General Patton's typist in WW2, World War II. And he told me that if Patton, I mean, I just loved the way he spoke about Patton. And he said he was tough. He was really tough. And he said if he had known I was gay, this was what he said, If he had known I was gay, he would have shot me with those pearl-handled pistols of his. Because he had no tolerance for that. None. He said, but I worked for him. He also told me that he had a crush on Dwight D. Eisenhower. You know, he even dressed like him. He looked a little bit like him, actually. And he dressed like him with that short little coat and, you know. But this is a man who, because of the heavy-duty pressure after the war to get, you know, to ferret out gays in government and in the military and all that, he got married. And why can't I think of his wife's name? Don't know. But he had a family. He had, you know, sons and all of this. And but he was absolutely gay, and I liked him. He was a nice guy. He could be not so nice at times if he, you know, you got on his wrong side. But I did like him. I knew him for a while. And he had some really interesting stories about the United States and Washington, D.C. during this period of time, because they were being persecuted by J. Edgar Hoover, who, of course, was gay. And so you have to wonder, how does this happen? What is going on? So I ask you now, what is going on? How do these things happen? Who are the people who are making these judgments? Are they fit to make the judgment? You know? What are they hiding? And oftentimes these people are hiding things. I don't know. Like I said, judge lest ye be judged. I mean, it's just one of these things that drives me absolutely nuts. People are people. People are people. And sometimes the biggest keepers of the secrets are the ones who are putting out the most horse hockey. You know what I mean? And it just really irritates a lot out of me. Was it Jimmy Swaggart? Yeah, Jimmy Swaggart, who had to come out and ask for forgiveness, crying because he was, he had a hooker, I think, and, you know, James Baker was another one, and there's so many. I mean, we're human. We're human. But this person I know who has been judged is afraid to make moves in life that would be beneficial because of past judgments, therefore afraid of future judgments. And it's like, no, you can't do that because life is too valuable. Now, I have been judged often in my life. So much in my life I've been judged. And it's been one of those things where you just say, okay, judge away. Judge me away. Try being a professional tarot reader or astrologer and not to be judged. And, you know, people do get into hot water over that. People do get judged. And you just get kind of used to it after a while. You get used to it for the way you think or the things you know. I've mentioned before, you may have heard or you may not have been listening, whatever, that when I was in college, most of my friends were, as I was an undergraduate, most of my friends were TAs. You know, they were graduate students. That's true, and I wonder why that was. I don't know. But a couple of them were astronomy students, and I, of course, was interested in astrology and metaphysics. And these guys were really good friends of mine. Really, 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 really good friends of mine. And I thought, well, this is, you know, really quite nice that these good friends of mine. And when I got married, one of them even was one of my groomsmen. And that guy, years later, I got in touch with him on Facebook, and he refused to communicate with me. He just wrote me a thing, said, I can't afford to be associated with you. Groomsman at my wedding, lived with my family because he was broke, because he was saving up money to go to grad school so he could become a full-fledged professor at a university, you know? God almighty, I can't afford to be associated with you because you are an astrologer and I am an astrophysicist, you know, and that would really look bad because you're my friend. Now, that was a judgment that broke my heart. And that's a judgment that I think is the type of thing that you just go, okay, all right, well, it hurt me. I've been hurt a lot because of judgments. And then eventually you just learn to say, you know, people are going to judge. And that's the way it is. And I now view it just simply as part of human nature. That's just the way human nature is. So, and I've also learned that the best thing you can do is just not to judge people. And it's really a very good lesson. And so I try not to. And quite honestly, I don't think I do. I try not to. I'm human. I probably do. You know, like the Oval Office thing that happened. Or the thing that happened with, you know, Zelensky or whatever, you know. We do judge. But I try to realize that these people, but, you know, when people hurt other people and screw with their lives and really make a difference. But judgment is one of those heavy, and unfortunately, our whole being human thing is kind of based on that. I'm better than other people, supposedly. Are we? That's kind of the basis of being human. We are better than other people. My ancestors, the ancient Egyptians, they kind of took that stance. We are better than. We are better than other people. Because we are Egyptians and we live next to the Nile and we're civilized and other people just, frankly, they're not so much. They loved the Minoans. They really did. They loved the Minoans, consider them to be very cool people. So they hung out with them. And other people, some people were okay. They were not so fond of Libyans. There was an old joke that if my daughter wanted to marry, or my sister, if my sister wanted to marry a Libyan or a wild dog, I would always choose the wild dog. You know, that stuff like that. Ridiculous. But so they thought that they were better than other people. And I guess at the beginning of civilization, you might look around and say, we have it better than other people. But does that mean you're better than? I think some people like that still feel they're better than others. I don't feel I'm better than anybody. And here's the deal. I have never, ever in my life felt I was better than anybody. Ever. Never. You know, I've just never felt that. And maybe that's been a detriment to my future. I don't think so. I've just never felt better than anybody. So, we sling these things around that I'm calling judgments. We swing this idea around that I am better than or stronger than or smarter than or whatever than. See, I had a friend, and this guy was a member of Mensa. And so he wanted me to join, and I said, I'm not smart enough to join Mensa. He said, well, take the test. Let's find out. I said, I'm not taking the test because I don't like the idea of Mensa. And he said, okay, well, you know, you should try it. And I said, I don't want to. He said, trust me, I think you're. I said, no. So he, without my knowledge, and I don't know how he got them, he sent off for my transcripts and got my transcripts and said, right here, you're more than enough to get into Mensa, you know. And he said, I'm annoyed because you're actually more than me into Mensa. And I said, no, I went to a few meetings. And what I saw was sad, to be honest. Now, there's nothing wrong with Mensa. I mean, really neat people are in Mensa. Steve Martin is a member of Mensa. Gina Davis is a member of Mensa. But what I saw, first of all, it was expensive to be a member of Mensa. And I never had that much dough. But I really thought there is one thing about Mensa that I thought was kind of shabby. And that is to say, I'm smarter than other people. No, you're not. Maybe you have a higher IQ, but no one is really smarter than anybody else. As Forrest Gump famously said in the movie, stupid is as stupid does. And I think that this judgment thing that we do is really a detriment to our entire civilization and may just be the downfall of it. Back in the hippie day, back in the summer of love and days before and thereafter, when we were kind of evolving, I think, from the stiffness of the 50s, the stiffness of the post-war era, where it was, you know, I mean, yeah, it was opulent. It was, we were the most spoiled generation there was, baby boomers. We were spoiled. We were given everything when all we really wanted was love, you know. And so later on when it was like, we gave you everything, and all I really wanted was love. You know, I didn't want everything. I now want everything because I didn't get all the love I needed. You know, maybe some of you can identify with that. I don't know. Yeah, that's judgment too. And it's a lot of complaining. You know, a lot of people mistake. A lot of people mistake this sense of, oh, let's call it a feeling of, oh, these people are martyrs. You know, they like being, they think they're martyrs, or they like feeling like martyrs for just having had a kind of a rough time for a while. You know, I don't know. I would never want to be a martyr. That's not a good way to live. But when you really do have something to complain about, because there are people who genuinely have had horrifically difficult lives. You have not had it easy all the time. As a matter of fact, I'm going to bet money. I don't have any, but I've got some, you know, but we all have to have a little, or we don't get to have computers and stuff. But I'm going to bet that you have had difficulties in your life. And you are entitled to feel unhappy about them. And the key is to kind of at some point say, yeah, but that's kind of what made me who I am. I had to become disillusioned with society at some point. And it happened to me pretty early on. And I feel kind of lucky about that. I had to say so long to society. I had to really say, I don't like the way people handle things. Judgments were made about me at a very early age. And then they continued to be made about me by other people from then on. And things were done to manipulate the system in such a way that I was shelved. I was put into very particular pigeonholes. Now, I'm sure many of you listening know exactly what I'm talking about. To where you said to yourself, this is not who I am. I'm not this good person that they're talking about. I'm a rebel, or I don't feel like this, or I don't want to be this person. And one day, you found a crack in the system, a crack in the wall. You found the door was opened just a little bit, and you burst out. And you said, I'm going to be me. I mean, some of you may be on this metaphysical path, and you started out in an extremely religious household, and you were judged for being a heretic or being blasphemous. Maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe you were judged for the way you wore your hair. Do you know that there are still schools in this country today that, even though there are supposed to be laws against that, where a child can go to a child can go to school with a certain type of haircut and still get kicked out of school that day? Yeah. When I went to school, boys could not have any type of facial hair. I had that little, you know, 15, 16-year-old boy thing that a cat could lick off, you know, on the upper lip. And they made me shave it off. And what they didn't know was that every time I shaved it off, it got a little bit thicker, which absolutely thrilled me, because what I wanted was, you know, like a Pfizer on my face. I wanted a thick growth on my face. So, but they said, you have to shave that off. I said, okay, I'll do that, because that's kind of what I've been hoping for. Because my mom didn't want me to start shaving. She, you know. But it was that tiny little thing. And then finally, somewhere along the line, they decided that boys could grow beards in school because it was becoming such a problem. Because they were growing them anyway. And they couldn't stop it. They tried. Hair over the collar. Oh, my. Oh, boy. Girls wearing dresses. They used to make them kneel on the ground. Get on your knees, girls. Boy, what does that make? Oh, my God, that's... Anyway, they'd make them get on the ground, get on their knees, and if their hem did not touch the ground, well, then they had to go home and change, right? Or they'd write them a letter and, you know, your daughter can't come to school unless she has the proper dress. And there are people who say that, you know, and there were schools that had uniforms. Now, if you have a uniform at school, I can see that. But that's all judgment. And it's all singling people out for being wrong. And making other people feel something. Singled out as being bad. Singled out as being improper. For being different. For being, yeah, causes insecurity, that's for sure. You know, I had really curly hair, very curly hair, ethnically curly hair, very Egyptian ethnically curly hair, and it made me insecure, and I got taunted and teased, and, you know, so I was who I was. I became a wise guy to combat the teasing and the taunting, and sometimes I got beat up. So I learned to turn it into wit of something. I don't know, half wit some other days. But the whole point is that this idea of a society that's based upon, and we talk about the rule of law, and at this point in our history, in our culture, I'm not sure the rule of law has any strength anymore. So we have to take it on ourselves to decide what are we going to be and what are we going to do. I'm just thinking things through today. I don't have any notes. I'm not working from a crib sheet. I'm just not. My mind has been full of flotsam and jetsam. And some pretty precious cargo as well. I get annoyed. I get annoyed because who we are as individuals is what either aids or detracts from who we are as a conglomerate, as a society, as a family, as a couple. Was or whatever. And I think that what is imperative for our personal happiness is to know who and what we are. We have to be a part of something, I think, in order to be anything. That may sound contradictory and contentious and cantankerous, but I've made that decision that we have to know what we are a part of in order to essentially be happy. Now, that doesn't mean we can't be alone. Because being alone is far out, if that's what you want. But people who cut themselves off completely from anything, I think end up in a sort of a bad place. Ultimately. Not in the beginning. But ultimately. Because we human beings are designed for for communication. The word commune being a part of it there. Oh no, the word communist has the word commune in it. Nah, forget that. I'm talking about the need for others somehow in our life. We love to love. Man, I was part of a tribe way back when. And we were as different as we could be. One of the members of the tribe I was part of ended up becoming a Baptist minister, which surprises me, but maybe not. We all seek something, and we were all seeking something. We had become disenchanted with what we thought the world was. I know I had. And so, we sought it, perhaps, as young adults. Maybe we found it along the way and then embraced something, somewhere. I'm still seeking. That may sound crazy at my ripe old age, but I think I'm ripe. Some might say I'm well overripe. But I still seek every day to improve my world and improve my worldview and to make my world stronger, because I think that there is nothing more important than self-improvement every single day. It's exhausting. It's a type of calisthenic. See, that's ridiculous, you know, because the word calisthenic means, I think, to beautify. But it's about the mind. I should do the body as well, but, you know, I might destroy something in the process, but I'll get there, I hope. But it's the idea of truly honing your mind and getting to a place. I'm pretty sure I know myself relatively well, and I like myself. I haven't always. I have judged myself quite harshly in the past, based primarily upon the judgments of others. That glaring spotlight of loathing that I placed upon myself based upon what others thought. And it is not attractive. Man, if you don't love you, no one's going to. So you have to at least soften up and realize how wonderful you are. You're the only you there is. And that is not just a trite idiom. That is the absolute truth. There is no one like you. And it is my belief that you are rather wonderful. And that you should take a bow. The things that you have done. Now, some of you are artisans. And incredible artisans at that. You know who you are. Some of you are cooks, and incredible cooks. You can make masterpieces in the kitchen, and you feed others. Artisanship, being a cook, being a musician, creating music for someone else, singing to someone. Man. These are expressions of love. Writing someone a haiku, what is more from the heart? What is more an expression of love than writing someone a haiku? You know, not everyone's going to appreciate something like that. What we do as human beings, these are expressions from our heart. I read something yesterday. My wife sent me a meme about dogs. And it just, it's pretty good. But there was one line in it that dropped me. Just dropped me. It said, when you've got a dog, your heart beats in two bodies. I thought, holy mackerel, is that lovely? Because it's the truth. And I thought, you know what? My heart beats in many bodies. Because I've got kids and grandkids, and I love them all. Now, truth be known, between you and me, my heart beats in two bodies all the time, and that's my dog, you know, and me. But it also beats, well, for example, yesterday. Yeah, imagine this. I get this text out of the blue, and it's my granddaughter wanting to know if she could bring by a loaf of fresh-baked jalapeno and cheddar bread that she'd made. Now imagine that, out of the blue. What is that other than an expression of true love? Well, of course I said, boy, howdy. You bet. And she and her partner came over and gave me this lovely, lovely loaf of jalapeno cheddar bread, sourdough, I think. And it's wonderful. Now, this young woman, she's not a young girl anymore. She's a pediatric oncology nurse and a charge nurse, the youngest in the hospital in their history. I'm proud. Can you tell I'm proud? And she's my granddaughter. And she bakes. And boy, can she bake. And she was making excuses because it hadn't proved quite right and she wasn't sure what was wrong. And her partner said, you know, it's just that you're not proofing it as long as you used to. And I just was so in love with them. I mean, so in love with them. And I just had to hug and hug. And they probably thought, what's wrong with this old man? And I thought, you weren't around a long time ago when that's all we wanted was love. That was all. And to be accepted for who we are. And I looked at them and I thought, I accept you too for who you are. And you accept me for who I am, this crazy old man. And I thought, that's what the world should be. And yet there are people right now in this country who don't accept them for who they are. You know? And she's on the front lines with sick kids. An angel of mercy. Every day. I thought, man, you know, that's judgment. That's judgment. And by the way, that bread is unbelievable. And I let her know so. Whew, lovely stuff. She said I should have had a lot more jalapenos. I said, no, it's fine. It's just Jim Dandy the way it is. She and her mom, my daughter, love food that will just take the roof of your mouth right off. That used to be me once upon a time. No longer. I'm a little tamed at this point. This experience of life is so beautiful. It is such an amazing time for us. It is the time for us. Why are we going to spend it hating people or judging people or, you know, thinking we're better than? Because that's a lie. You know, there are people who truly are heinous. I mean, I'm just going to say that. There are people who plan genocide. There are people who have planned ethnic cleansing. There are people who have done things that are absolutely miserable. And they do it for reasons that I can't even begin to fathom, like greed. Or who knows? They may be deluded into thinking they're making their countries safer for themselves and for their offspring. I don't know. I don't pretend to understand the complexities of running countries or the world. But they obviously feel that they are better than someone else. And I'm saying to you, they're wrong. They're wrong. That if they would learn to treat people equally and with love, they wouldn't have the types of problems they have in the first place. If you go back into history and you look at the most egregious actions, but you follow the thread all the way back to the very beginning, you can find out where it all started. And you say, well, here's the problem. Here's a group of people who were treated abysmally at some point, and it started a grudge because someone judged them and treated them bad. Treated them badly, perhaps. Could be both, you know. It's hard to live our lives the way we would like to all the time, because things happen. Things happen that push us off balance. Things happen that make us grit our teeth. I live in Colorado, and Colorado, I read just the other day, is number 3 when it comes to road rage and reckless driving. Number 1 on that list is Louisiana, or Louisiana, as I was taught. I lived there for years. It was number 1 in road rage and reckless driving. And that, careless driving, reckless, same thing, that I can attest to. That I can attest to. Saw a lot of road rage. I was almost involved in a road rage incident, and I didn't do anything that I could think of. I had to outrun a car. Well, outcar a car. I wasn't running. That would have been ridiculous. And I had to floor the car as fast as I could to get away from someone who was chasing me. And I had a friend with me. He said, do you have a baseball bat in this car? I said, no. He said, you should always have a weapon in your car. Always. Especially in this state. We got away. And I said, what would that guy want? He said he wanted to kill you. And I said, oh my God. I said, I didn't do anything. He said, this is Louisiana. Now, for those of you who still live there, I live there too. But you know it's true. You know it's true. I have a friend who lives in Louisiana. He's a dear friend of mine. I've known him for over 50 years. And, I guess a little less than 50 years, but he has a Tesla. He's got one of the really fast, sporty ones. He's had it for years before they became pariahs. And I said, well, so what do you like about that? He said, you can go really fast, really quickly. And I said, oh, is that to get away from people? He said, exactly. Because he's, you know, an older fella now. He said, it's come in handy. And I thought, wow. So that's number 1. I can't remember what number 2 was. What was number 2? I don't remember. Might have been Tennessee or something like that. I shouldn't stereotype. See, that's me picking a state. Sorry about that. Number 3 is Colorado. So I live in a state where there is a lot of road rage and there's a lot of bad drivers. And I think to myself, that's life. Where they're in life, in our culture, there are a lot of careless drivers and just a lot of careless people and reckless people. And there are a lot of people who just, quite frankly, are angry all the time. And to be honest with you, what do we do? Well, when I drive, I do my best. I drive speed limit, which irritates almost everybody. And I also try to obey the rules, which irritates all the others who aren't irritated by my speed limit. But I do that because I think it's better. And I try to do the same thing when it comes to my social interactions, and I try to do the same thing in general. I try to maintain decorum. I try to treat people with dignity. because this is it. This is my shot at this life. Now, there may be other lives. There may be other things coming. I haven't always been even-tempered and even-keeled, as they say. I've been a hothead in my life. I've been a lot of things in my life. But the one thing I want to be now is useful and happy and an example. And I think that's what we do. And by we, I mean, you know who I mean. I mean us. We are different. We meet people. And, you know, there's that group of commercials about the people who are turning into their parents. The commercials to me are hilarious because I know I've done a lot of that stuff, you know. Acting, you know, they really do have we oldsters kind of pegged. You know, and it embarrasses me, some of them. And I really try not to act like that, not to be too helpful, not to, you know, talk too much. But they're really funny. And I realize that, part of it is just we, as you get older, you just feel like engaging. You feel like being helpful. You feel like talking. I don't know. There's something there. You become friendlier. I don't know exactly what it is. But it's important. People become important. You begin realizing, you know, when you meet someone, I've cut back on that because I realized that there is an entire generation that just don't care. They don't care. They don't want to hear anything. So I've learned to read the cues a little bit better, save myself my breath and the embarrassment. But it's true. But we are different. We have something, and it's not an age thing, but we have something that's important to share. And that is a certain amount of, I hate to use the word goodness, my goodness, how about that? It's a hope that we can bring something to the world that it needs. Love. The word is shunned by so many. A friend wrote me the other day, and I wrote back and said, this was on social media, and I wrote back, I love you. I always will. And I have a feeling that that was probably a little bit of a bother for him. I've known him for, at this point, over 50 years. And I we were really close friends. And I knew him and he and his wife for a long, long time. And we were very close friends. And then I moved and he moved and then we got, you know, just ended up back in the same city, much older. Don't know if we're any wiser or not. Got together, had coffee and donuts, and he had changed, it seemed to me, and I had probably changed, it seemed to him. And we caught up on our lives. And I still felt this love for him as a friend. But when I said that, maybe he took it the wrong way, maybe not, didn't hear anything back, maybe I won't, maybe I will. But I meant it in a way that was very truthful, and that I still love him. He was always very dear to me. Yeah. And some people, you can rekindle that feeling, or it never leaves, but it's a burden for them. I don't ever want my love for someone to be a burden. Another friend of mine from that same period, we hadn't seen each other literally in 40 years. We got together. He came to town for a convention. We got together. We had lunch together. Then we had coffee. And when we left, it was as if we had never parted. And we were just as close. And now we talk at least once every few weeks, if we can. We do the, you know, the video conference thing. And we are easily as close as we were back then, maybe closer. Because we value the fact that there are so few of us left anymore. And that love is strong. And I mean it, of course, you know how I mean it. Having lost a friend in February, a dear friend of mine whom I knew from the time I was in high school, people are valuable. People are much more important than things. Things can be replaced. People cannot. And if there are people in your life that, quite frankly, aren't good for you, don't hang on to them. Let them go. If there are people who are injuring you on a daily basis, a weekly basis, a monthly basis even, let them go. If there are people who are hurting your self-image, tell them. And if they don't change what they're doing, and it may not be their fault, it may be their influence upon you through your filters. If you can't change those filters, let them go. Sometimes people are just toxic for us. You know? But if you love them and you want them in your life, hang on to them. Oh, I just saw what time it is. All right, I'm done. I do love you all. I hope you won't let me go yet. Till next week, I wish you all peace and love. Talk to you later. Bye.
Until next we meet, I'll be waiting for you right here in the Paisley Penny Arcade.